Morning, folks. Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. I've got a guest across the way this morning visiting town. That was kind of probably going to happen quite a bit here over the next few days. Folks may be visiting, coming in, and visiting with family. My guest is Amy Taylor. She is from Fairfield, from Heron, from Fairfield. Where do you call home? What is a hometown to you?
Oh, interesting.
You didn't move to Fairfield until you were like 17.
My grandma and grandpa always owned a farm out in Jeff. Uh-huh. And so even though we moved around a lot when we were kids, my dad was in retail management. So
sure.
We were always kind of moving around the southern Illinois area. But we lived in either Jeff or Fairfield a couple different times when I was growing up, so I've always considered Fairfield home.
So, Amy, tell the folks your people. Who are your people? Because there are people here listening who will know.
They will know. My mom and dad are Gary and Kathleen Taylor, and my grandma Taylor was Gladys Taylor, and uh-huh. She lived out in Jeff.
Okay.
And her husband was Ivan Taylor. He passed away in the 60s, so
okay.
A lot of people might remember him, but it was quite
so you never met him, probably.
Never met him.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah. You moved up here, from Heron back in the early 80s,
mid-80s. I graduated my senior year of high school from Fairfield, but
okay.
I spent my first 3 years of high school in Heron.
Where do you have more friends?
Fairfield.
Is that right?
Yes, very much so. It's interesting.
Wonder how that happened.
I think because my mom and dad were here, and after high school, I kept coming back here to visit
them.
Oh,
I see.
And I think it's just there's something special about the people you graduate with,
yeah.
And they become your long-term friends. I still communicate on Facebook a little bit with some of the people from Heron, but
mm-hmm.
I kind of lost touch with them after I moved here.
Do you make a point to come back to reunions whenever you get a chance, or how do you do that?
I was at my 10-year reunion, but I didn't go to my 20-year reunion.
Okay.
And it really just depends on work.
You don't need to say how many more there are. That's all right. The 20-year reunion was like last month is what you were saying.
As long as I have Botox, I don't care how many years it is, as long as I don't look as old as I am.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, she lives in Hollywood, for crying out loud. So we have to figure out, we got to figure that stuff. You have brothers and sisters around here, too.
Gretchen Taylor, her married name is Shoemaker.
Uh-huh.
She and her husband live in the St. Louis area,
right.
And my brother is Sean Taylor.
Okay. So tell me, before let's tell folks what you do or what you have, what you do. You're a marketing genius.
Yes.
She has business cards to say Amy Taylor, marketing genius.
Genius. Wiley Coyote, super genius. Yes. I am a marketing executive, an entertainment marketing executive. So
how in the world? Okay, that's part of the show today.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what we're going to talk about today. I'm wanting to figure how in the world a kid goes from Fairfield, Illinois, Heron, Illinois, Fairfield, Illinois, FCHS, to
mm-hmm.
become a marketing executive in charge of all the marketing decisions on humongous movies. I'm not talking little stuff here, ladies and gentlemen. We're not talking Woody Allen stuff. This is big stuff.
I moved to Los Angeles 2 days after I graduated from SIU.
Okay. Let's talk about SIU.
Okay. Well,
why'd you pick SIU?
You know, they had a great communications department, and it was close enough to home that I could see my family on a regular basis, but also far enough away from home that I could feel like I was independent.
Yeah.
So I loved Southern Illinois University, and somewhere in my college career, I ended up with a free plane ticket. I'd been bumped off of a flight. I had a free plane ticket, and there was a very good friend of mine that also had a free plane ticket, and we
uh-huh.
decided to use those free plane tickets to take a trip to California.
Nice.
And my intention in going to SIU was that I was probably going to end up with a job in Chicago or maybe
sure.
St. Louis, and I went to California, and I landed in Los Angeles and went, nope. I'm going to live here.
No kidding.
Yep.
You fell in love with it that
loved
quickly.
It.
Why?
Loved
why
it.
Did you fall in love with? Because you know that I have had a trying relationship.
Yes. Yes.
With Los Angeles. Why did you love about LA so quick? What grabbed you about Southern California so fast?
What I loved about Los Angeles and California is Los Angeles isn't like another. It doesn't look like a big city, even though it's a gigantic city. It's kind of a lot of neighborhoods mushed up together.
Uh-huh.
And I think what I liked about it, it was a big city, but it felt neighborhoody.
Right.
But I also loved the fact that every different neighborhood had a different feel and a different vibe. And I loved the weather. I love the weather. There's the Eagles song, Hotel California. There's something about it that just gets you and kind of grabs you when you're there. And it isn't for everyone.
Really?
It isn't for everyone. If someone wants to live in a big city where you're near tall buildings and you walk everywhere, that's not
bodegas
Los Angeles.
And,
that
and
is not Los Angeles. There's a part of Los Angeles in downtown that is functions
well,
that way,
much.
But it's not much.
Where is that?
It's in downtown, right near the Staples
Central,
Center.
Century Cent- City.
Yeah, no. In downtown Los Angeles. Century City is probably another 20 miles away.
That's just tall buildings.
It's tall buildings, but it doesn't have that downtown feel.
I see.
But it's just a bunch of these neighborhoods together, and each neighborhood has a unique personality. Hollywood is one neighborhood. You have Beverly Hills. You have Santa Monica. You have the beaches,
and
it's just fantastic.
So you and your friend, we'll go ahead and mention her, because she's a gigantic star in her own right.
Jackie Debiton.
Jackie Debiton. By the way, did you see on she changed her name in that – on the credits for the new show that she did the other day.
She did?
Yeah, it was like Jackie Q or something like that, or Jackie D or something.
How funny.
She's changed her name. After 20 years.
Yeah.
Well, either that or she didn't want to be associated with... faking it. That was the show.
Faking it, yes.
That's right.
Okay. So my friend Jackie and I, she is an SIU alum as well. And after my trip to California where I'd gone on vacation, I came back to SIU and I started asking anyone and everyone, do you want to move to Los Angeles? Do you want to move to Los Angeles? And Jackie wanted to be an actor and she was planning to move to New York, but she was like, no, I'll go to Los Angeles with you. And we packed up our cars. This was 1992.
Okay.
So it was well before people were using cell phones on a regular basis.
Right.
My dad bought me a CB for my car.
Okay.
One of those big brick-looking CBs that kind of looked like a phone. And then her folks bought her one, and we drove across country in two separate cars and talked the whole way. Every once in a while we'd stop at a restaurant, and people would come up to us and go, are you the girls on Channel 3? And then we'd realize... Then we'd realize that we needed to change channels. So that was a little trying.
That's great.
Yeah. But we made it.
I haven't heard that.
You haven't?
No.
Out of all these years, you haven't heard that story?
No, that's a new one.
It took us a long time to drive across country because we stopped at every Two-Headed Snake Museum. We stopped at the Grand Canyon, all the sites we could see across country. And then we got to California.
So you're on Channel 3. They said, hey, look, the world's biggest ball of yarn
exactly,
is ahead.
Exactly. Hey, Jackie, are you listening to this station? This song is on. I mean, we were talking like we were on a phone, but we were on a CB.
That is the coolest.
And we did it all the way across country.
Oh, that's fun.
And then when we got to Los Angeles, we stayed with another friend of ours, Todd Abrams, who was an SIU alum.
Okay.
He let us sleep on his pullout sofa until we found an apartment.
That seems like how people move to LA.
Absolutely.
For the most part. They go out there with nothing and start.
Absolutely.
Basically start a new life.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, and that was exactly. I had I've never had an intention to be an actor. I didn't move out to Los Angeles.
No, you weren't wanting to act.
Jackie wanted to act. I just wanted to live in Los Angeles.
I see.
But once we got there, I realized that the main industry was entertainment.
Right.
And while I didn't want to act, I wanted to be part of that business.
Sure.
And my first entertainment job was maybe a year and a half, 2 years after I moved to Los Angeles.
No kidding. What were you doing before to pay the bills? Waitressing waitresses.
Yeah, I did not waitress. My first job in Los Angeles was working for Dun & Bradstreet, and they owned a bunch of Yellow Pages and newspapers, and I sold advertising.
Oh, okay.
Door-to-door. Went door-to-door selling
advertising. Now that probably turned into a pretty decent skill that you might need
later on. As you know, with your wife, you can talk to anyone when you're in that business.
That's exactly right.
And I did that, door to door, and it also kind of tied to my degree at SIU is in advertising and journalism.
And so you were able to bridge out and get a move in with Jackie. I guess you guys got it. Is that when you moved into the house in Westwood?
No, we first found an apartment in Brentwood.
Oh, okay.
In Brentwood, and we stayed there for the first couple of years, and then we found a house in the Westwood area.
Oh, okay.
But I'd been there a couple of years and just saw the lure of entertainment and started trying to figure out how do I make my way into entertainment. And there is a radio station out there called K-Rock.
Uh-huh.
And one of a friend of a friend, her mom worked at K-Rock, And that woman knew someone that worked at Hanna-Barbera, which is an old cartoon studio.
Sure.
Scooby-Doo, Flintstones. And they had a junior-level marketing assistant job open.
Really?
And I quit my sales job where I was making a nice amount of money and went to work for an entertainment company as an assistant where I was making not a nice amount of money, but it was a fun job.
I got into the entertainment industry.
And it's a hard industry to get into.
Well, see, now you were with Hanna-Barbera for several years.
I was with Hanna-Barbera for several years. Turner owned it, and Ted Turner owned Turner Entertainment, and he had TNT and a lot of the other television and cable assets under him, CNN. And he bought Hanna-Barbera, and he'd used the Hanna-Barbera cartoons to launch Cartoon Network.
Really?
And
so he just bought the inventory.
He bought the whole thing.
Right.
He bought the inventory.
But he bought it for the inventory.
He bought it for the inventory. And so when he launched Cartoon Network, you would see Jetsons and Scooby-Doo and Flintstones and all of those characters on Cartoon Network. And Hanna and Barbera were still alive at the time. They were both at the studio.
William Hanna, I believe.
William Hanna and Bill Barbera. And they were both still alive and very creative and actively involved. And after Cartoon Network had launched for a little while, we started a new program called, I think it was called What a Cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea behind that was to generate new cartoons.
Oh, really?
So if you had an idea for a cartoon.
Itchy, scratchy.
Dexter's Laboratory, Powerpuff Girls, Johnny Bravo, all those cartoons were developed at that time.
Is that right?
And if you were an artist, an animator, if you were a...
Ren and Stimpy.
That one I don't think was Hanna-Barbera. But if you could be anyone off the street, and if you had an idea for a cartoon, you could come in and pitch to the studio.
What were you doing?
I was marketing. I started as an assistant, and then I got my first promotion to, I think, a coordinator level. And at the time, I was doing marketing services.
Stop. Mm-hmm. What's a marketing person do?
Marketing person, it depends on what company you work for. But
at Hanna-Barbera.
A marketing executive at Hanna-Barbera was working with all of the cartoons to figure out how to best promote them, not only on air, but at retail or at events. So
that's the question. Did you ever have to dress up as Ren or Stimpy?
No, I did not.
Johnny Bravo?
But people in my organization
figured they had to.
Depending on your height. One of the main reasons that I didn't have to.
It's a good thing you're 5'7" or 8 or 9
exactly.
or whatever you are.
I was too tall for most of the costumes.
Outstanding. That's beautiful. This is a great show. I'm talking with Amy Taylor. She's a marketing executive out in Hollywood. We're just getting started here on the Bruce Dickey Show. We'll be back on WFIW AM 1390 and 104.9 FM. Back after these. Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW FM, Fairfield, Illinois. My name is Bruce Dickey, joined this morning by Amy Taylor. She is a marketing executive in Hollywood, formerly with Hanna-Barbera and the Warner Brothers and Universal. And I got to tell you, the Hanna-Barbera stories are pretty good. Did you ever meet Ted Turner? Or how? This tells you how little I know about how these organizations work. I don't know how big. I'm assuming Turner's organization is huge. You got to figure he's got thousands of employees. And Hanna and Barbera were probably pretty nice plums in the organization. But how big was Hanna-Barbera at the time?
Hanna-Barbera was about 500 people.
So, okay, so Ted buys that. Does he ever come in and say hello?
Yeah, he does. He does. And he was and was this force of nature. Really charming, wonderful guy that would come in, but he was very direct about what he wanted.
Terrifically charismatic, as I understand.
Terrifically charismatic and funny.
Yeah.
And so it was Hanna and Barbera were both still alive. It was Ted Turner, and there was a gentleman named Fred Seibert that was the president of Hanna-Barbera at the time. And all four of those folks were kind of directing how Hanna-Barbera was going to go from a cartoon studio that produced cartoons for the 60s and 70s to a new studio that was producing new and current cartoons. And the program I'd mentioned to you before, What a Cartoon, was designed to create new cartoons.
Right.
So if you had an idea for a cartoon, if you, Bruce Dickey, had an idea for a cartoon, you could walk into the studio and pitch it. Didn't matter if you had any animation experience at all. If the studio liked it, they would give you 7 minutes. You could produce a cartoon, and then they aired it on Cartoon Network.
Really?
And audiences got to vote for their favorite
cartoon. I don't remember that. Is that like what became Adult Swim or something?
No. That was well before Adult Swim. So how that worked is they would air these 7-minute shorts, these 7-minute cartoons, and then audience members got to vote on the ones they liked the best. And the ones that audiences voted on were turned into series. So that was Dexter's Laboratory and Powerpuff Girls.
Right.
Those were probably the two most popular. And then you had stuff like Cow and Chicken, Johnny Bravo, a handful of other...
Space Ghost.
Space Ghost was a classic show.
Okay.
And so they were creating all these new shows, and they were looking at the library of classic Hanna-Barbera shows and figuring out how they wanted to update them. Yeah, Scooby-Doo, Space Ghost, all of those types of characters.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, so you're there for... That must have been...
I was there for several years.
How often did you meet Turner?
Hmm,
was he ever in meetings or something?
He was in meetings. He was based in Atlanta.
Did you ever ask him about the Braves? I guess by then he'd already sold the
Braves. No, I didn't ask him about the Braves. But one of the perks of being with Turner, if you lived in Atlanta, you got tickets to the Braves games. If you lived in Los Angeles, they would give you something called Dodger Dollars. Because he owned a baseball team, he wanted the people in Los Angeles to be able to experience baseball as well.
Sure.
So they would give us these Dodger Dollars that were printed fake cash, but you could take them to the Dodgers game and buy tickets and buy merchandise. So that was one of the perks for working there.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That is such fun.
Yeah.
So you decided to heck with that. I'm going to Warner.
So Turner sold his organization to Warner Brothers.
Okay.
So Time Warner and Turner merged. And through that merger, Warner Brothers absorbed Hanna-Barbera.
I see.
So all of the animation activities that Hanna-Barbera was doing went over to Warner Brothers Animation.
Okay.
All of the marketing activities that I was involved with went over to Warner Brothers. And under the Warner Brothers umbrella, there was a DC Comics marketing team.
Right.
There was a Looney Tunes marketing team. And then there was the Hanna-Barbera.
And they never got the Marvel.
No.
Which would have been nice.
That would have been really, really, really nice. That would have been a brilliant coup. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
No. Well, that's too bad. All right, so you've been forged into Warner's. And to me, that's kind of how things work out there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just basically companies gobbling each other up and being successful or not quite as successful, and another company comes in and gobbles it up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That is how a lot of organizations work, and it's definitely how entertainment works. And I went from Hanna-Barbera to Warner Brothers, and I think I was at Warner Brothers about a year. And Warner Brothers was a fabulous place to work, but it was to me, it felt so corporate coming from Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
You know, my office at Hanna-Barbera had pink carpet, yellow doors, purple walls.
It was
really a creative, fun environment. The animators were working right down the hall from you. And Warner Brothers was a big studio.
Yeah.
And it felt very, at the time, and I was a lot younger than I am now, it felt very corporate.
Sure.
And but it was a great place to learn. And
You learned the ropes and learned.
I went from working for a small animation studio that was owned by a big company, but it functioned pretty independently, to working for a big corporation. And I learned a lot. I learned a ton about how to really market in a much broader way.
And you were still, though, marketing cartoons at
still
this
marketing
time.
Cartoons for at this Warner. Point for Hanna-Barbera under Warner Brothers.
Okay, I see. All right. Now, we've you've been there for a year. Listening to you talk about it and knowing you a little bit also before this interview, you got a little stifled.
Got a little stifled.
And decided to move on. How long did that process take?
I knew when I went to Warner Brothers that I wasn't going to be there long term. I knew it was not the environment for me. And the really interesting thing about the way entertainment works, and again, a lot of businesses work this way, it's all about who you know. And when Hanna-Barbera was downsized and merged into Warner Brothers, all these people I knew from Hanna-Barbera started working at other studios.
Yeah.
So some went to Disney, some went to Warner Brothers.
Just to stay at regular cast-offs.
It's regular cast-offs, everyone going into all these places. So I had a lot of friends in different studios. And one of my friends that had worked in international marketing landed at Universal. And another one of my friends, Stephanie Sperber, you've met her before.
Sure.
She's a friend
of
mine. Gal. She and I worked at Hanna-Barbera for years together. She also ended up at Universal. And there was this job that was a manager of marketing job at Universal. And I interviewed for that and went there. And it was, again, it was a big studio.
That's corporate, though, too.
It was corporate, but it wasn't nearly as corporate as Warner Brothers. It wasn't as big at the time
as
Warner Brothers.
Was Warner Brothers, it wasn't Time Warner yet, was it?
It was all happening right around the same time.
Okay.
So it was Time Warner at
beginning
the time.
Beginning to become
the behemoth.
That was a pretty big company. Well, Universal is, too.
Universal is, but at the time it was still just, it was a film studio.
So you went from cartoons to film then?
So I went from cartoons to film.
What was the first film you began, as marketing, so you know, you're marketing director, right?
I was senior manager and immediately promoted to a director.
Senior manager and director. Mm-hmm. All right. So that means what is your responsibility and what are you in charge of there? The marketing of a particular movie or all the movies or what?
So what I was hired to do is I was brought on to lead the promotional marketing efforts. So the way marketing is set up at a film studio is there are lots of divisions. Marketing is one umbrella.
Yeah.
There's a division that handles all the media buying.
Previews.
There's a division that handles toys. There's a division that handles all of the theater distribution, working with the theaters. There's a division that handles everything. The division I was responsible for was promotional marketing, which is working with companies like Burger King or McDonald's or toy companies.
Making sure that Han Solo looks good on
the
McDonald's cup or something.
So I was responsible for that. And the two things that I was hired to work on, and this is how it made sense going from a cartoon studio to a film studio, the first project I was hired to work on was Curious George. So it made sense because it even though it was going to be a movie, it was still going to be an animated movie.
Jim Carrey?
No, that was originally, it was going to be
Tom
done.
Hanks.
It was originally going to be Tom Hanks.
Yeah, okay.
And then it took 10 years for it to be made. So it ended up being, it was released in 2005, I believe.
Unsuccessfully, as I recall.
No, successfully.
Curious George was?
Absolutely successfully.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It opened to, it was a 2D animated film. So 2D animated films actually don't make as much as 3D animated films, but it did really well.
I didn't recall.
Really well. Yeah.
Who was the boss?
George was the monkey and the man with the yellow hat. It was all
man with the yellow hat.
Yeah, man with the yellow hat. So that was the first film I was hired to work on, and the other film that I was hired to work on was Jurassic Park: The Lost World. So that was the second Jurassic Park film, and we worked with Hasbro and we worked with a ton of companies to create a big marketing program that would launch at retail and also on TV.
That's amazing. All right, so you're charged basically with making sure that somebody's going to buy the toys, whether they go to the movie or not.
Mm-hmm.
You need them to buy the toys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And toys was a piece of it. The area that we were responsible for, I was responsible for, was all of the merchandising. So it could be toys, it could be apparel, it could be something like a museum tour, which we had.
What's the most inventive? You did that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What was the most inventive promotion you think you guys came up with as a team or you? Or what was your biggest gigantic success?
Ooh, that's interesting.
When you put the Grinch tail in Happy Meals or something like that. I don't know.
There were a lot of really fun campaigns I've worked on. There were two that I think were my favorite.
They can be fun, and they can also be fun and successful.
Yes. My two favorite Both were successful. One was for King Kong, which is a film that was launched in 2005
Peter
or 2006. Peter Jackson's
Naomi Watts.
King Kong. And we did a promotion with the New York Lottery, and they spent millions of dollars advertising our film and their program around the lottery. And they created this campaign that one of the things that they did was that was really inventive is on bus shelters in New York City. Uh-huh. They created these ads for the King Kong lottery, and it would constantly rotate the amount of how much the lottery pool was.
Okay.
And that was the one of the first times that technology was used.
Really?
It was a really new technology at that point. They also did two or three TV ads, and it was really fun. They had a bunch of extras running through the streets of New York.
Oh, now that's
looking
cool.
Looking behind him. So it was like King Kong and was chasing him. That was a really fun one. And another really fun one was we launched Despicable Me, which was now
giant. That,
now it's giant. At the time, Despicable Me. It's kind of a hard word for kids to pronounce. You're not. It's a brand new film,
and
new characters.
And nobody understood.
Nobody knew it.
Nobody understood that the stars were going to be the little yellow things.
Nobody knew the minions were going to be the stars. So we did two really big programs. We did a program with IHOP, where they spent, again, millions of dollars launching this campaign, and they created a whole menu based on Minions and all of the activities around Despicable Me.
So when you are putting together, as the studio part of this, mm-hmm. do you work in conjunction with IHOP on this?
Absolutely.
So you help name you're helping maybe name the IHOP food.
Absolutely.
Or something.
Absolutely.
No kidding.
Well, they actually had a test kitchen, and we got to go in and try all of the food that they were thinking about creating and going, okay, we like this one. We like this one. This one needs a little bit more cinnamon. So much fun. It was
so much
fun. And then we narrowed it down to the items that really made the most sense. That program was so successful that there were these little things called Cinnaminions, which were basically like donut puffs.
Sure.
It was so successful they ran out of them.
No
before
kidding.
Before the promotion was over. And they spent millions of dollars on TV ads, and they created special menus.
That's the worst thing ever. You run out of product.
They ran out of Cinnaminions. They ran out of Cinnaminions. But it was such a fun program. And there have been a lot of those types of programs where you just sit back and you go, this is really fun. It's a job, but it's really fun.
I've got Amy Taylor here. She's an executive, marketing executive in Hollywood, and we're having fun talking about it. Well, when we come back, we're gonna go ahead and let everybody be a star, wondering who the stars that she's met. I was going to say a word that I really didn't want to say. We're going to let everybody know who that she's met and hangs out with. With the beautiful people, and I also want to know. I'll let you think about it. I want to know. We've talked about the successful campaigns. I want to know the one that just didn't work out that you thought was going to be incredibly successful, and the work you did was so creative and just didn't work. But that's you're listening to the Bruce Dickey Show. I've got Amy Taylor here. We'll be back on WFIW AM 1390 and 104.9 after these.
Tying a noose in the back of my mind. If you thought that you were making your way to where the puzzles and pagans lay, I put it together. It's a strange invitation. Sweep up my lazy bones, and we will rise in the cool of the evening. I remember the way that you smiled when the gravity shackles were wild. But something is vacant when I think it's
Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. My name is Bruce Dickey. Appreciate you tuning in today. And my guest across the way is Amy Taylor. She is a former Fairfield girl, now a Los Angeles native. And where do you live out there? You out there in Brentwood, out there in Beverly Hills, out there with the beautiful people?
Definitely the beautiful people. Some of them are more beautiful externally than they are internally.
Yeah, I was going to say, of them it takes a little bit of bucks to keep beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. We live in Miracle Mile, which is right between Beverly Hills and Hancock Park. Park is another area of town that's kind of like Beverly Hills.
Nice. We've been talking about she's a marketing executive in the and I asked you the question before we start talking about the stars that you've met and partied with. I'll ask you a question in a minute. Tell me your most unsuccessful. I asked you your most successful, and I know folks hate to bring up the most unsuccessful, but what was a surprise to you that did not work?
I think the most unsuccessful program I've worked on was Babe, Pig in the City. Uh-huh. It was the second Babe movie.
Right. Babe was such a huge hit.
It was so charming, so kid and family friendly. It was a beautiful film.
Right.
The second film, we developed a huge program around it. But the film wasn't that successful, and I think part of the reason why was the tone was a little bit darker than the first film. And because
they didn't talk about bacon or anything.
No, they didn't talk about bacon. But there was a dog that was kind of hanging that terrified some parents. And because the film wasn't successful, all of the programs, all of the marketing programs that we did around it just didn't live up to our expectations.
Is it possible? How often does it happen that the film is unsuccessful, but you still consider the marketing program a success? Like if, I don't even know what, some movie that tanked. John Carter. Say John Carter comes out and they've got, and McDonald's has, all these cups and stuff with John Carter, and they're burning through these and loving them. Folks are using it, but the movie just, nobody goes.
That rarely happens. If the film doesn't do well, the marketing program tends not to do well. They're really tied hand in hand.
They are tied in, huh?
In my career, I can only think of one example where that happened. We did a film called Josie and the Pussycats, based on the old TV show and the Archie comics.
That was Hanna-Barbera, too.
And that was a Hanna-Barbera title, but it was a film done by Universal. The film did okay. It didn't do great. It didn't do a terrible job, but it just was kind of mediocre. But the marketing program that we developed around it, especially the merchandising program, was successful for 2 or 3 years after that because it hit a fashion trend. If you think back to when this film came out, I think it was
2003.
It was early 2000s, somewhere around there. A lot of leopard print, purples, sparklies. It just tied into a fashion trend.
That's interesting.
And that's the only example I can think of where the marketing program was successful and the film wasn't.
Okay. All right. Who are your neighbors? Let's talk Hollywood stars. We're going to talk Hollywood stars now. Who's your best friend that is a big star? Do you have any?
Jackie Debiton is my best friend.
Is your best friend. Jackie is a star. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've watched the TV show, maybe the most folks might remember her from The Office.
The Office, Friends. She's done ER. She's done Chicago Med.
She had a recurring role in The Office. Jackie plays a good slut.
Yes, she does.
Does a great job playing the Randy girl, shall we say? Mm-hmm. And she was kind of a slutty girl on The Office. And if folks remember particular episodes, you might remember that didn't she pop out of the cake or something?
Yes, she popped out of the cake. She dressed up as a nurse.
Yeah, she was the nurse.
She was the nurse.
The nurse on the 10K run.
Yes, exactly.
Right. I was trying to remember that.
So she's my best friend. She actually is from Southern Illinois as well. She's the one I would mention we went to SIU together. And she's actually in the Alhambra area visiting her family.
Is that right? Oh, mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Now she is, did she move to New York?
She moved to New York 2 years ago.
How's she doing out there?
Loves it out there.
Wonderful.
Loves it. Has this fabulous apartment that New York, it's very difficult to get apartments with a balcony or a
sure.
or a big balcony. She has a gigantic balcony, and it directly looks at the Empire State Building.
Well, that's
it's
wonderful.
Beautiful.
That's
beautiful.
That's great. Okay, so she's the big star.
She's my best friend that is the star.
Okay,
yes.
Who have you met that are big stars?
I said
you were hanging out with Tom Cruise.
Yes, I have not. I actually have not met Tom Cruise.
Out of all of the people
I've met, I haven't met him. I
figured you'd have met Tom Cruise. You've met Tom Hanks.
I've met Tom Hanks. I've met a ton of people. One of the best stories I have is we were working on a Rocky and Bullwinkle film, and Robert De Niro was producing it, and he starred in it.
Uh-huh.
And
he was Boris Badenov, right?
He was. And he came into one of these big marketing meetings where we were presenting and showing everything that we were doing, and he came in dressed in almost like a Mr. Rogers sweater
uh-huh.
and walked up to everyone and goes, "Hi, my name is Bob." And it was just such a weird thing because you're like, you're not Bob, you're Robert De Niro. You're not Bob. But it was a very fun moment. But I've met a ton of people. I actually have a scar on my arm from going to a party, Heath Ledger's party. It was a party up in the hills, and I had in Hollywood Hills, and I had very, very, very high heels on. And his house was located at the bottom of a hill.
I see.
So I started walking down the hill and started picking up speed in heels that I could not stop.
No rail to hold on to.
I tripped and hit the ground and then hit a car.
Oh,
luckily,
no.
The car wasn't going anywhere. So I actually have a scar on my arm from a Heath Ledger party. But
the star story that has always stuck with me was, and you probably told me this 20 years ago. 15 years ago, certainly 15 years ago, was the first time. It was like right before the movie XXX came out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you were talking about the meeting with Vin Diesel.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Tell the folks, get the women. Did you hear the sigh, ladies and gentlemen? tell the folks about meeting Vin Diesel. I mean, people may think, you know, he's just a rockhead. Apparently
not. Very involved with everything we do from a movie perspective. Any movie that Vin is involved with, he's part and parcel to the marketing campaign. Uh-huh. He doesn't come in and just act. He's actively involved in trying to be part of the whole program that's put together. So we'll have meetings where he'll come in with lots of ideas, and he wears what you see him wear in the Fast and Furious movies. He'll wear tank tops or t-shirts or leather jackets. And it's just this booming voice. That voice that you hear in the movies is absolutely his voice. And he walks in and just, he'll sit right next to you and put his arm around you and encompass everyone and ask questions. And I mean, he's very involved. He's very involved with any of the interactive games we do. And he's a lot of fun.
The words I recall you using.
What did I say? I have no idea what I said.
You said this to my wife while I was sitting there, but this was too doty. And Vin Diesel he walks into the room and he just exudes sex.
I didn't remember saying that, but yes, he does. That's funny.
Oh, see, now that's great. It must be a lot more effective and a lot more successful, or a lot of big help to the marketing department when you have a star that's involved in that.
Absolutely, a star, a director, or a producer. If they're involved, if they're excited about what you're doing, it makes the
how
job
often do you get
so
them,
much easier.
How often do you get them excited?
It really depends on the director, the star, or the producer. Producers or directors really just like to focus on the film.
With The Grinch. Was anybody really involved there?
Jim Carrey was not involved in the marketing of it, but he would participate in things we asked him to. We did this great program on The Grinch where we rented out the Armory in New York.
Uh-huh.
Big, huge building. We invited tons of press. And we basically decked the Armory out like Whoville. And he got up on stage and did this little kind of comedy, not comedy routine, but he did his shtick.
It was
really, really powerful.
Jim Carrey has he could probably burn 5 to 10 minutes off the cuff anytime.
And we had all of these press outlets from around the world aiming their cameras at him, and we got some great coverage out of that.
Well, and it helped the movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The movie. What do you think the most successful movie you've done before this year? Because
this year has been
a huge year.
Huge year, yes.
What movies have you worked on? Well, all right. We've got like a minute and a half left in the show. It's time for you to brag. Let's talk about some of the big movies.
I've worked on all of the Despicable Me films. I've worked on all of the Jurassic Park, Jurassic World films. I've worked on all of the Fast and Furious
films. So you had the Jurassic World this year?
Yeah, we had Jurassic World this year, which
That was doing okay.
It's done really, really well. It's done really well. Just a little tiny film.
Yeah, that one's a little real small.
Yeah.
Tell me about Chris Pratt. Did you get to meet him?
I didn't actually meet Chris Pratt, but he is so charming. He literally got on a plane and traveled the world to help open that film. And you talk about how things can be even more impactful when you have a star or a producer or a director working on it. I think part of the success of that film was what he did, getting on radio, getting on TV, and just promoting. He is so charming that I think that really helped the film.
That's the part of the job that people may not recognize when you see an actor. Mm-hmm. The marketing half of the job is a big portion of it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And some will... All right, 30 seconds. Who doesn't like that part? Give me the star that will not participate.
Oh, gosh. Jim Carrey was helpful in The Grinch. He doesn't particularly like to do all of those extra activities.
He doesn't do it.
So you have to go in with a set of asks that are specific.
Really?
And what I will say is that a lot of the comedians don't like to do it as much as the dramatic actors.
I wonder why that is.
Maybe it's personality. Maybe you find that a lot of the comedians that are working tend to have a little bit more of an introverted personality personally than they have as their persona that is their public persona.
That's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, this has flown by.
It's flown by.
Thank you very much for joining me this morning. I hope you had fun.
I had a great time.
Thank you so much. That's the Bruce Dickey Show for today. We'll be back tomorrow with, I think I got Keith coming on. Thanks for listening, folks. Talk to you soon.
Mm-hmm.